This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
The conduct and perhaps the efficiency of clinical trials in the European Union will change significantly when the new clinical trial regulation is fully implemented in 2019. There is general agreement that harmonizing the assessment and supervision of clinical trials through a European Union portal and database set up and maintained by the European Medicines Agency in collaboration with the Member States and the European Commission is a reasonable goal, particularly for trials that are conducted in multiple member states. But the devil, as we say, is in the details. Will this effort bear fruit? There have been delays in implementing this regulation, in good part because the portal has not been ready. Will it be ready in time? What can be done this year to make implementation of this regulation successful in 2019, also considering that it will coincide with EMA's move to Amsterdam? I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of the DIA Global Forum. My guests today are two experts on this topic: Dr. Mireille Müller, Regulatory Policy Director for Novartis in Switzerland, and Dr. Fred Musch, Director General for Pre-Authorization at the Federal Agency for Medicines and Healthcare Products of Belgium. Dr. Müller, welcome.
Welcome.
And Dr. Musch, welcome to you as well. Delighted to have you with us today.
You're welcome.
You both will help lead discussions on this topic at the DIA Europe 2018 meeting in Basel, and we thank you for that, as well as for joining us today. Let me start with the first question to you, Dr. Müller. What are the most consequential changes that this new regulation will make to clinical trials in Europe?
Let's go stepwise and take all the stakeholders one by one. For the patients, it's really the acceleration and the increase of development of new medicines, which is of foremost importance. Also, patients are getting increasingly involved in the development process for new medicines. And actually, we are very well represented in an IMI initiative, which is IMI Prefer, where the goal is to increase the patient's preferences in the development process.
You mean IMI, the Innovative Medicines Initiative, correct?
Indeed, yes. Also, patients are increasingly involved in the ethic committees, and the ethic committees with the new regulation will have a higher visibility than before. And the ethic committees are streamlined, and most likely Dr. Gret Musch will be talking to this point. There is also an increased transparency, so patients will have access to more lay language data, not only to the protocol, but also the results, which are summarized in a lay summary. Overall, it ensures that you have a high standard of safety for all the EU participants in clinical trials.
Is there more? Please continue.
Yes, for the investigators, of course, they will have to adapt from the national legislation to the EU framework. And they will have also to learn to collaborate between the competent authorities instead of their local ethic committees to national ethic committees when relevant. And also an additional flexibility that the clinical trial regulation ensures is the co-sponsorship. So for institution, it might represent a way to have informal networks of researchers or research institutions that may conduct a trial together. For us, for the industry, it's really a simplification in that you have one clinical trial application, which gives you access to a unified clinical trial environment. We are diligently updating our procedures, systems, and training. However, we anticipate to encounter some challenges with the very short timelines.
Dr. Musch, as a regulator, what is your perspective on the most consequential changes of this new regulation?
Well, I think, as been said by Dr. Müller, we will go to a smooth and harmonized process across Europe via one application through the portal and one decision. So I think this is really a huge step forward, and also for sure the transparency, which has been said also, and the increased patient involvement and at the end, the full empowerment of the patient.
Will the portal be ready in time for 2019?
We are working on this very hard. I can assure you on this. We really see progress, and we hope to be ready in 2019.
That's very reassuring. Thank you. Can you give us perhaps some insights as to what has delayed the implementation of the portal? Where have there been technical issues or collaboration issues? Can you give us a sense of that?
I'm only involved in the expert meeting of the member states. I think it's not an easy IT project, as many IT projects are, because we have some technical difficulties, which, must I say, have perhaps been a little bit underestimated, but we are making progress on that. That is one issue. Second issue is, of course, the need of common positions on functional requirements from the different partners, from the member states, for instance, but we are working on that very hard, and I think we have a good team who is working on that. So it's both technical and finding the common grounds on acceptable functionalities for the member states, for the sponsors also.
Should we be concerned that EMA is going to be moving to Amsterdam next year at the same time that the regulation will come into force? Is there going to be a delay caused by the move, do you expect?
I do not expect this, because EMA has really worked out on a very professional way a contingency planning where the impact on this project is very limited.
Let me stay with you, Dr. Murphy, if I may. You're scheduled to deliver a presentation at the DIA Euro meeting on the implementation of the clinical trial regulation at the member state level, the state of play in Belgium. So I'm curious, what is the state of play in Belgium, and does it differ from the state of play in other member states?
I will first say that in general, most member states are really working hard to be ready to implement this new clinical trial regulation. And we try to share best practices also at the different European fora where we meet. That's one point. Now, more specific for Belgium, as you know, each member state has to define one national contact point. In our country, it will be the national competent authority, so it will be the Federal Agency for Medicinal and Health Products in Belgium. This can be different if you compare to the Netherlands, for instance. There we have the CCMO, so the ethics committees who will take the lead. But in general, in most member states, is the national competent authority who is the national contact point. And we will work in a one-to-one relationship with a college, which is in fact an umbrella structure, assuring the quality of the work of the recognized ethics committee. So we are also working on going to a reduced number of ethics committees, which are really designated to do the assessment of clinical trials very specifically. And the colleges, in fact, are interface, and they are hosted in the Federal Health Public Service to assure the independency of the national competent authorities. So that's the general structure, and that's the way we will work. We will work together on the assessment report part one together. So we will do mainly quality part and non-clinical part and some aspects of the clinical part. And the ethics committees will also work with us on the clinical part of the assessment report. And we will go to one common assessment report at the end, giving one opinion of the estimation of the trial.
You mentioned that the number of ethics committees in Belgium will be reduced. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, that's correct. So we are now working with 28 ethics committees, but the criteria to be fulfilled to become recognized will be very increased. So it will demand extra efforts from the ethics committee to be recognized to do this job. And so we aim to be with 10 ethics committees at the end of the procedure, yes.
Is there a possibility that a lower number of ethics committees will lead to longer timelines for those ethics committees to review protocols, thereby causing delays in clinical trial startup?
No, we did an analysis up front, and we do not believe that it will delay the applications, no. On the contrary, to have a specialized ethics committee working on that job and really have the expertise required and working with the agency will really make the system more professional.
Will the resources available to each ethics committee be perhaps increased somewhat to enable them to cope with the workload? Mm-hmm. Given that there will be fewer ethics committees, would each of them be larger or better resourced?
I think so. So that's in fact up to the ethics committee to apply for recognition. But in our law, we have in fact the requirements to which the minimal composition of ethics committee should lie. And they have to fulfill that requirements. And they have also to keep records on their performances, so to show that they are really able to do the job in the delays, within the delays, and with the required state-of-the-art assessment.
Dr. Muller, maybe I can come back to you and ask you, beyond the impact of this new regulation, what other changes do you anticipate in the conduct of clinical trials in the European Union, say, over the next 5 years or so? For example, if we look at areas such as orphan diseases, precision medicine, real-world evidence, patient engagement in clinical protocol design, can we expect clinical trials to evolve over the next 5 years or so, again, beyond this regulation?
Definitely, because it's a very dynamic field. I would say that one of the first events or major feature I would see in this time horizon would be the impact of digital. We see it increasingly, we are using it to simplify the informed consent process. For example, you have a lot of patients which don't want to read an informed consent of over 30 pages. So using a tablet, making it more interactive, more interesting for them, and also more informative is really a key feature. And you can extrapolate that. We are working on integrated tools to streamline and make the clinical trial conduct much more efficient, much more integrated on hand of IT tools. You have also now endpoints which are measured with IT tools. So you can use your smartphone, for example, to respond to quality of life questionnaires or to enter some of your data, how you are feeling, etc. So that's one of the areas where there is a huge progress. The other area is a lot on precision medicine. You have an increasing number of clinical trial designs, which are getting quite complex because they are adapting exactly to the right mutation, genetic mutation. And this knowledge is progressing at a very high speed. We see that especially in oncology, where we have this new umbrella basket design and platform design. So this is absolutely key to speed up the whole development process. And when it comes to patient involvement, patient knowledge about clinical trials is really increasing. They are using social network to learn about what are the trials which are going on in oncology, for example, but also other diseases. These are quite integrated also with patient associations, which are triaging their members to certain trials or at least giving them the information. And they have also quite a lot of experience with their disease, and which is absolutely key to design new trials, which are more closely related to what they are experiencing in their life. So we are increasingly getting this input from the patients in the design of our programs. And of course, when the trial is over, they have now much more information available on the public websites, like the EU Clinical Trial Register, but this will evolve with the portal, which will take over the outcome, the output of the clinical trial results. So it's a very dynamic field. There will be a lot of changes of knowledge we are accumulating and which is exponential at the moment.
With respect to the collection of real-world data, which can lead to useful real-world evidence, do you anticipate an increased use of wearable devices and portable biosensors to collect data 24/7 from patients who participate in clinical trials over the next decade or so?
Absolutely. There is an increase of not only apps, but other devices. However, at the moment, we see the real-world evidence more to inform the natural disease history generation. You can use it in multiple aspects. But as your question related to the new clinical trial regulation, in terms of interventional trial, it is at least not clear to me how it will really be tied in with the real-world evidence. So it's for low interventional clinical trial, which is also part of the clinical trial regulation, of course.
Dr. Mush, if I may, on the subject of patient engagement in clinical protocol design, I think we know that the European Medicines Agency has been active on this front. The Belgian Authority, how are you all engaging patients in drug development discussions, possibly clinical protocol design, if you are?
We play, in fact, on two processes. One is, and it's a pilot which is started now in our agency, is to involve more the disease-oriented patient representation, as well in the assessment of a clinical trial, but also in providing scientific advice before a clinical trial starts. So we aim to do this now, the second trimester of this year, to have a pilot run with that. And of course, we have the experience from patient engagement at the scientific advice working board, for instance, at the EMA or at the Committee for Orphan Drugs, where they really did a great job.
Thank you. And finally, let me ask you both, in connection with the DIA Euro meeting, what takeaways about conducting clinical trials in Europe do you hope the participants in the Euro meeting will bring home from the conference? Dr. Müller.
My wish for the conference is that the clinical trial regulation needs to really deliver to have this portal as soon as possible. In addition, we also need to have a system to overview the clinical trials in Europe that is sufficiently flexible to adapt to the fast pace of scientific knowledge. And that's absolutely key. We have this, as I mentioned before, these complex study designs linked to precision medicine. So we really need to be aligned with the state-of-the-art scientific knowledge. The digital one is also one I hope that will come across during the conference and which will be also key to conduct clinical trials of the future. And finally, as a European, I hope that Europe remains a key region for clinical trial research, because I believe that's the key asset for all the EU citizens. Having a strong clinical research is ensuring a very good healthcare system and the state-of-the-art healthcare.
Dr. Mush, your final word. As a regulator, how do you envision the messages to participants at the EU meeting in Basel?
Well, I really hope that we can give trust to all the participants that the regulatory system, which is built at Europe for clinical trials, but also the related processes such as scientific advice, whether it's at national level or at EMA, really provides an increased harmonization between member states assessing these trials, and finally give an equal access for patients within Europe. And as said by Dr. Müller, I think also the important to have a good clinical research area here in Europe. We have a lot of expertise, and I think it's important for patients that they know that by this they can have also an early access to innovative treatments which wouldn't be possible otherwise.
Well, that brings us to the end of our conversation. Dr. Mush, thank you so much for joining us today and providing the regulator's voice to this conversation.
Thank you.
Dr. Müller, thank you very much as well for joining us and sharing your insights with us.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate your time very much indeed, and we'll see you in Basel in April. For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.